You're once, twice, three times a Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk, and I'm Paul McInnes, and as far as I'm aware, we're going to float on the lighter side of synth pop with Air. We're going to review new music from Portico Quartet, Phoenix, and Memory Tapes. We'll feature French heavy metal in the feature with no name. But first, on this week's podcast, it's the not insignificantly talented Mr. Sofyan Stevens.
I don't mind, I don't mind. I made a lot of mistakes in my mind, in my mind. You came to take.
That was Chicago by Sofyan Stevens from his celebrated album. Sofyan Stevens invites you to, come on, feel the Illinois, or, if you're into that whole brevity thing, Illinois, or Illinois, because you take the E off and then the S becomes silent, as I'm sure Rosie Swash would be keen to point out.
I would be, had you not pointed it out yourself
already. How are you?
I'm very good.
It's been a long time. I'm fine, but it's been a very long time since I saw you.
Yes.
And you've been in Japan?
I have been in Japan, yes.
Did you think for a minute, I'm never going to come back, I'm going to stay out there?
Not when it was raining cats and dogs all the time. I thought this is quite hard work, but it is so clean and everyone's so polite and it's so efficient. And then you come back to Hackney and you nearly get in a fight in Sainsbury's and you think, oh, that was nice.
We could learn a little bit from the
Japanese.
You're back from Japan and immediately you're into work again and you're talking with Sofyan Stevens. Now, as a musician, he's not short on ambition, is he?
No, he's not short on ambition at all. He's often described as folk or folk indie in those sort of genre brackets, but his music is so ornate and orchestral that it goes far beyond the boundaries of any sort of genre like that. I guess the ambition also comes from the concepts and the ideas. So the Illinois album you were talking about earlier is part of this infamous 50 States project where he said he was going to do an album for every state in America. But he's also got these spiritual or biblical themes that crop up again and I think lend a lot of drama to the music. But he's back with his latest album is called the BQE, which if you're from New York, you will know is the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. So I guess what I wanted to know is what was so inspiring about that particular expressway.
It's basically a product of the 50s and the post-war building boom, but it's very unusual because it's inefficient and it's badly constructed and it took decades to build. It is the object of, you know, tremendous scorn in Brooklyn.
I see. Okay, so it sounds like it would maybe fit in London quite well.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. There was a kind of like unbridled imperialism, you know, in the ethos of the U.S. at the time. This is in the like 40s and 50s, in which the government believed that democracy reigns. You know, America is is living in its golden age, and it has answers to all the, you know, the problems of society, of modern society. So I think it's that kind of aesthetic and that kind of philosophy that's shaping the sort of the politics of urban renewal and, you know, rebuilding of cities and highways, big civic projects that would basically save society and save mankind. You know, that this was like the modern man, and that was the aesthetic. And the BQE is part of that whole movement.
You obviously have first-hand experience of Detroit. And your album, Michigan, which is obviously inspired by in part by that, is actually, I guess, more of a domestic album in terms of themes. It's not, you know, not necessarily trying to tackle anything historical. Did the idea for the album, did you decide that, yeah, I want to put together a collection of songs for Michigan first, or did the kind of concept come about after you started writing the songs?
Yeah, it's definitely an accident, you know, that it was just an observation that I made about the material in the midst of it. It wasn't premeditated. And yeah, it wasn't. It's not meant to be a historical survey or a political survey of Michigan at all. You know, it's the concept of place and geography is just as much a fabric, you know, a veneer as anything else.
I forgot the start. Use my hands to use my heart, even if I died alone, even if I died alone.
And so how did that lead on to you wanting, did it lead on to you wanting to do the 50 States project?
Well, that was kind of a joke, you know, it was just like publicity so that people would pay attention to the record. Yeah.
Forevermore.
Yeah.
And now are you regretting it a little bit?
No, because I still think it's funny.
Okay. You don't get annoyed when people ask you about it? Like, oh,
I mean, I think there are better things to talk about.
Okay.
I mean, I've made so many songs, there's so much material. And people always ask that question, like, what are you doing with this project? The problem with a kind of, a proposal like that is it's all hyperbole, you know? It's all proposition. You know, it's like saying I'm going to fly across the ocean, or we're going to land a man on moon. Mm. We're going to go into outer space. Or, you know, we're going to start a colony under the ocean, you know. I mean, some of these were realized, but it's all just sort of anticipation.
And so, okay, so let's talk about Seven Swans, which is not part of the 50 States project, but that's got a very strong kind of celestial theme going on there. And I'm sure that you've been asked about this before, but how much of that is just a concept that you want to attach yourself to, which is kind of the biblical references and the celestial themes, and how much of that is to do with, say, your upbringing and your personal beliefs?
You know, that's a very personal spiritual record. You know, it's the material is all, it's very mythical in a way, but it's also really personal. And I think it's mixing all these things. It's mixing sort of personal beliefs and conviction. You know, I am a Christian, but it's also mixing that with sort of fables and folklore, and then I think at the heart of it, like fundamentally, it's a very romantic record. You know, it's about an intimate, affectionate relationship with spiritual things, with the divine. You know, so it's pretty sensual in a way. Mm. As much as it is spiritual, it illustrates the side of me that's a mystic, you know, at heart.
Did the church play a strong role in your sort of musical upbringing? You know, I know artists like Aretha Franklin, you know, was brought up completely singing in the church. Was that part of your experience?
Not necessarily. I mean, I didn't start going to church until I was older, and I was baptized Methodist, and that church is, you know, tradition of just kind of staunch hymns that were really uninspiring. But I did play the piano for the Methodist Church, and I was like a candle bearer, like an acolyte. But then I went to one of these sort of evangelical, non-denominational churches in high school, and the music there was absurd. It's just like rock and roll.
That was Sufjan Stevens, and his BQE Brooklyn Queens Expressway is out on October 19th on Asthmatic Kitty Records.
Thank you, Rosie. That was all very exciting. So exciting, in fact, that what follows can only be an anticlimax. It's the anticlimax himself, Paul Lester.
Yeah.
You're in the studio for Singles Club. How are you?
I feel okay, actually. I'm feeling a bit edgy.
Really?
Yeah,
why?
Tense. Well, it's getting to that time of the year where you have to start thinking about the following
best
year.
Best of list.
Well, best of the year, which is fine because you just summed me up. But, you know, my job, I guess, is to be a little bit of a Mystic Meg, but with less hair. But, yeah, picking the 10 acts, a lot harder than last year when you're thinking about 2010, just British acts. I don't know who the LaRue and the Florence and the Little Boots are for
really?
2010.
That's interesting. That is interesting. Okay, well, as I say, we are here to talk about new music from wherever we might find it. And so we'll start with Paul's choice. And this is Memory Tapes with Plain Material. I've been gone That was Plain Material by Memory Tapes. Memory Tapes is one man, Dave Hawkes, and he spells his first name D-A-Y-V-E. If that isn't wacky enough for you, the man doesn't have a phone either. Dave has recorded under a number of pseudonyms, most of which involve the word tape or cassette. The suspicion remains that Dave is actually Marty McFly, stuck in the future but desperate to get back to 1986.
86 is about right, actually. You know, that the beginning bit. I hope you've heard the whole thing, right?
I have.
Because it starts off kind of scratchy, like a C86 track, and maybe with a bit of a New Order circa Brotherhood vibe, also a 1986 album. And then it erupts. That's not quite kind of the word, really, because it's something a little bit more delicate and sumptuous than an eruption, into this burst of electro-funky colour that is just gorgeous. And yeah, I love it, and I love the album, Whence It Springs, actually. The album's called Seek Magic. And Memory Tapes, this chap is one of those people I've seen him put in a group of people along with the chap from, was it Washed Out? One of those bedroom characters, lo-fi electronic, kind of budget-lavish characters that has emerged in the wake of Aerial Pink that are making, beautiful music, electronic, it's pop. Kind of like if Brian Wilson was making Smile, you know, in the year 2009. That maybe this is the kind of thing he'd come up with.
Well, it goes back to that slightly narcoticized feel again, isn't it? And we've got another vocal that sounds like it's been recorded in a basement.
That's the one thing about it. I don't really like the distance that's put between the vocal and the rest of the record. And also, I was like, who does he sound like? And then it hit me. I think he sounds a bit like Gary Barlow.
Oh, good.
Barlow is one of the foremost songwriters of our generation.
He's not a bad singer. He's just not someone that you'd associate with Surf's Up.
Gary Barlow, my God. I would have thought maybe, Bernard Sumner,
early
days.
I would have been able to hear that if he hadn't had such a sort of distortion put on the vocals, because Bernard Sumner was always up there.
What I found quite interesting was the thickness of that second half. It starts out quite a thin and almost plain track. Mm. But by the end, he's chucking in kind of vocal samples, but also about three or four different melodic hooks as well.
There's loads.
It gets really rich. And you end up thinking, oh, that must be on purpose then, the contrast. But you've got to kind of go through that first 2 minutes before you get to that point.
Well, it's atypical.
Might have turned off by then.
Yeah, because the album is actually more like that burst of colour at the end. The album is kind of more like that. What I liked about this track is the surprise that you get in it starting off in one way, then it becoming like that halfway through.
That's Plain Material. It's one of the many Memory Tapes tracks available on their MySpace now, and the album is upcoming. You can already buy it on import. Second track on Singles Club is Paper, Scissors, Stone by Portico Quartet. That was Portico Quartet with Paper, Scissors, Stone. You may remember Portico Quartet as being the token jazz nomination on last year's Mercury Prize shortlist. No? You don't? Oh, all right then. Portico are known primarily for using the hang, an unusual type of steel drum which looks like the lid on a portable barbecue. Apparently, it's difficult to use at first, but eventually you get the hang of it. See what we're talking about there. Rosie.
Yes.
Your choice. You're going all jazzy.
I'm going to have to say, I'm sorry, I think hang is pronounced han. I think.
You
that's
think.
What it,
you better
I
think. Because if you're messing with
I'm
my joke
ruining
like that.
My joke. I'm sorry.
You better be confident.
I don't want to be one of those nincompoops that suddenly discovers jazz at some point in their life and bores everyone stupid, but I do really like this record. Admittedly, I would never have heard of them or paid attention to them if they hadn't been nominated for the Mercury last year, and I'd thought, oh yeah, okay, let's see what they're doing this time around with this album, which is called Isla, and that's also out next week. And I just think, with my very limited knowledge of jazz, it reminds me a lot of the Dave Brubeck's Take Five, which is like 40 years ago now, but it's got the same. It's led by the saxophone in this, and I love the fact that it feels like you're going on a journey and you're not completely sure, and it goes off on all these winding roads, but it always comes back to the same point that it started at. The album as a whole has got a real beautiful progression to it, and the Han or Hang, the Michael Han, is I think the instrument in there that gives it that very atmospheric layer.
Is there much room for jazz in popular music culture, Mr. Lester?
Well, I think there's that's actually a very good point, because I was going to say. There was a big debate, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, there was an American critic called Sacha Frere Jones that he waged war on the internet by asking the question, should white indie groups be incorporating much more black dance, funk, all those elements into the sound, the way they used to in the early 80s, groups like Orange Juice and...
All the way back
23 Skidoo, a certain ratio. Yeah, there's a history of assimilation. And now, you know, think of typical noughties white indie guitar groups like The Strokes and Arctic Monkeys. All the bigger Libertines, they're very white, they're very rock. And yeah, there's... he posed the question, is this a shame? I think it is a shame. I think this is really interesting work to be done. And if you can be a guitar group that can incorporate some of the stuff that they're doing, then that would be a very exciting thing. I mean, I feel very nervous talking about jazz. I have no idea. You feel like you need a whole different vocabulary. I'm sure it was a marvellous piece of music. And
okay,
great.
Well, I'm going to wade it right in here then, because I know nothing about jazz. The past 6 months I've started to listen to one kind of Miles Davis album after another. And what strikes me about the Miles Davis I like is, like, they're the weird ones. They're like Bitches Brew, rather than the kind of blue. And they're the ones that suddenly make your ears prick up and pay attention and go, either that's really discordant and unsettling or fascinating. I can't work out with this piece what would make me snap out of it just being background music. Rosie, what do you think is the standout part then of this track for you?
I think the saxophone is the standout part, and I don't think you're supposed to snap out of it. I think you're supposed to follow it. That's what the journey is all about, and you're supposed to wonder where it's going to go next, and almost like you're completely following the sax, as is the rest of the band.
So immerse yourself in it rather than make it work for you. I'll buy that for a dollar for sure. That's Paper, Scissors, Stone. It's by Portico Quartet. It's on the album Isla, which, as Rosie points out, is out next week. Final track on Singles Club is Love Like a Sunset by Phoenix, as remixed by Shuttle. That was Phoenix's Love Like a Sunset, the Shuttle remix. Phoenix are from France and are a haute couture band. So haute couture, in fact, that they were recently included in goodie bags at Paris Fashion Week. This remix you've just heard will form part of a deluxe version of the Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix album, which is due out later this year and will come with its own horse and carriage. My choice, Love Like Sunset. There's a kind of a sentimental choice, this, really, because Love Like Sunset is my favourite track on the Phoenix album. It's split into two halves, one's instrumental, one isn't. They kind of fade in and out of each other. I think it's quite clever and quite beautiful. Another fave of mine this year has been the Passion Pit album, which is something I keep returning to and still very much enjoying. It's in that electro-pop area we've been talking about. It's quite simple, very melodic. I really like the vocals from Michael Angelikos, but perhaps the main thing I like about Passion Pit is the percussion, which is played by a guy called Nate Dumoyer, who is also known as Shuttle, and he's the one who's done this remix. I like the two-step rhythm. It was on the track I selected last week, but I'm glad it's coming back. And I like what he's done with the organ line. He's made it sound a lot more cathedrally, a bit more kind of Louis XIV or something. Rosie?
Shamefully, I haven't even really listened to the Phoenix album properly slash at all because I just never really got that into them. So this did make me go back. I thought, well, I've got to go and listen to the original of this song. And I guess what I, you know, you listen to it, I thought, well, this is ripe for the remixing. And I have to say, in a way, I guess it, what this remix does is turn all the elements of the original on their head a bit. It's a, the original is about a slow, it is a dramatic build-up, but quite a slow sort of natural, unbreakable progression, and whereas the remix is just chunky. There's just a really chunky sound. It's kind of all I've got to say.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, it's. I wouldn't.
But
say
it's fun.
It's fun, and it's perhaps not the most sophisticated piece of music in musical history, Mr. Lester.
I absolutely love Phoenix. In fact, some of my favourite songs of the century have been by Phoenix. Wow. and a group. I always put them together with Tahiti 80 because they're both French. People talk about pop music a lot, you know, and people say, oh, it's a great pop song, you know, Oasis, great pop. That's not pop, that's rock. You think about pop, it has to be really succinct and melodic and exquisitely produced, and it has to be really seamless and immaculate, and it has to be a bit like Prefab Sprout in Circa Steve McQueen. And that's what Phoenix...
That is your template.
That's my template, really. You know, you want to ask what pop music is. It is that album, Thomas Dolby, very sort of airy and kind of lush and subtly orchestrated, but using electronics as well. And that's Phoenix, and that's Tahiti 80. Although, having said all of that, I thought that this was probably the least great Phoenix album for a while. And I was a bit worried that they do what a lot of those sorts of prefabby groups do, which is get scared that they're not being authentic and guitar-y enough, and they go a little bit more authentic and guitar-y. So, but I want them to be really gay and fey in the non-sexual sense. Although if they want to be gay in the sexual sense, that's
they're
absolutely
free to do
fine
that.
As
free
well.
To
I'm not like
too.
Danny Minogue on The X Factor. I really don't mind. You can pursue it all to the letter.
Let's have an X Factor silence.
No, you've got to give him credit for his contemporaneous reference, I think. That is very
good,
well done. This couldn't have been recorded in any other week. We'll draw a line there, but I can tell you that the Shuttle remix of Love Like a Sunset by Phoenix is widely available on the internet, and the deluxe edition will be coming out later this year. Quickly, some of your feedback on last week's singles. We talked about the XX's remix of Florence and the Machine's version of You Got the Love, and Punk Anderson said of that, Rosie,
it's hard to pinpoint how cold digital beats and warm soul voices mesh so bloody well. The old yin and yang, I suppose. The final evidence must be Burial's Untrue, the way even garbled half-human sounding snippets from unrecognisable songs lend real emotion to his creepy skeletal beat.
Creepy.
I think he did quite well at pinpointing that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point, well made. Stupid joined in. He said, I agree with Paul. The singer from the XX does have a lovely haircut. 'Tis true. That cover of a cover is a lovely warm blanket of a tune. Marimbas have never been so appealing. He also said, had this to say on Julian Casablancas. I'm also glad that Julian Casablancas discovered the hard to find demo button on his Yamaha keyboard. This was such a fun track, a bit all over the place and over the top, but fun. The video should have lasers, neon, and people turning on lasers in it.
I love it when people
party
flick
atmos,
light switches.
There you go. All right, we want your reviews of this week's tracks, Phoenix, Portico Quartet and Memory Tapes, on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly, or you can post them at our Facebook page. Tell us what you think of those tracks and these others that are out to buy next week. Whitney Houston, Million Dollar Bill. Bombay Bicycle Club, Magnet.
times before you slip. You made a wager with a kiss. Now you're the new name on her lips.
Bad Lieutenant, sink or swim.
At your door, big waves breaking on the shore. But are you gonna sink or swim?
I don't owe you, you don't owe me. One night only, if only I could take you back and just show you off. But I guess if I did that, the magic is lost.
Example, watch the sun come up.
Believe me, I wanna stay.
That is it for Singles Club, which means it's time to bid farewell to Paul Lester. Been great to have you in. Hope to see you soon.
Cheers, fella.
All right, next on Music Weekly, it's time for some fresh air. That's Sexy Boy by Air, a song you might remember if you were alive in 1998. Purveyors of silky smooth synth pop, the group have been in and out of fashion, but are back with a new album and a bold title, Love 2. With the possibility of a French pop duo having actually reinvented love, we jumped at the offer of an interview and sent our top man to Paris. I say top man, I actually mean Tim Jones, but he loves the group and he was on the Eurostar in a flash. He met the band, went to their studio in Versailles, and while weaving through their equipment, he asked Nicolas Godin and Jean-Benoît Dunkel quite how they managed to make electronic music sound so soulful.
That's a quest for us. Like to use this machine, and they can be terrible, like in the wrong hands. But we know how to use them to make them sound warm and soulful. And we always did that when we started to use vocoders. It was the same. We didn't want to sound like a robot. We wanted to sound like love, angel. You know? I think that's a particularity, like to make machines sound like warm.
Move on to the album, Love 2 sounds like a sequel, but I've read that you wanted it to be a fresh start.
Yeah.
So I was a bit confused by the title.
French sense of humour.
Oh, right.
Pretty surrealist. That's it. That's very surrealist, yeah. It doesn't mean anything, really.
Okay.
But it's just a joke, you know. But yeah, it's a new start. It's a new start in our career, I think. Now we moved in another phase. So Love 2 is like the second act of Air Carrier.
And why a second act? Why now?
I think that's middle age crisis. That's time either to buy a Porsche or either to make a new new style of music.
Safari, that was for me very, very important record for me. Did you think at the time you were making a kind of classic album? Did it feel like that?
Absolutely not, because I remember the record company, you know, at the beginning they didn't know what we were doing and nobody cared. We were like such a small obscure French band. Mm-hmm. And I remember that when there was like some business people, like business publisher people coming from London. They wanted to visit us and to hear the songs, and they loved it. I was asking to myself, but I don't understand why they like it, because when I hear the music, the pop music in England right now, like Oasis or this kind of thing, I wonder what is the link. There is no link, it's so different, so I don't understand.
I mean, do you think it tapped into the, when clubbing went mainstream? To me, it was what everyone put on when they got back from clubs.
That's why it went with Daft Punk very well. Mm-hmm. We are like the Daft Punk when you go out and when you come back, you know.
I think it cheapens the music or makes it better, the fact that so many people were listening to it on their way down from taking drugs.
I think that's the best moment to listen to music. Mm-hmm. My best memories of listening records is like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, smoking pot with some friends, and that's my biggest shock right there, really.
Right, so, because I was actually going to ask you when the best time you think is to listen to music, because a lot of my favourite albums, like the third Velvet Underground album, or kind of Richard Hawley or something like that, are always 3 a.m. records, and obviously Moon Safari is one of them. Do you really think that is the optimum time?
Yes, because you have time, nobody bothers you, and it's time to go to bed, but you hear a last record. Yeah. That's so cool.
That's amazing.
It helps also. Moon Safari was helping a lot for caressing people. it's a record of caress.
You're providing a service, really. Yeah. What do you think of all the kind of Justice and even labels like Kitsune?
Justice and Kitsune, it's the same posse as our, you know, as it's the same people we knew. Mm-hmm. For us, it's the same adventure. It's not okay. Something new. Like, it's not like new guys. We don't know who they are. Like, they arrived and they come from, you know, from nowhere, you know. But all this wave that you're talking about, for us, is the continuity of that punk. It's the same, really, the same group, you know.
Okay.
They are so, the Daft children.
We still wait for something coming from nowhere, and that something will kick us out, you know. Like the new real generation is not there yet, and because all these people, we feel a little bit too close from them.
There's a wave of rock and roll bands, isn't there, in Paris? Young rock and roll bands at the moment.
Ridiculous. This is French people are not made to be rock, you know. Like, this is like if you try to make wine or something like that. it's a nonsense, you know. But yeah, but there's a lot of teenagers in the posh area of Paris who make rock bands, and it's like, you know, they sound terrible.
They sound terrible.
Yeah. You know, this is like, it's not in our genes to make rock. I mean, I love rock. I love, as an audience, as a public, mm-hmm. I love to see rock shows. I love to hear good rock records, you know, like maybe English people like drink good wine, you know.
Couldn't be from The Guardian not ask this, but how do you feel about Sarkozy?
Wow. Sarkozy is a new generation of politics, you know. It's a new world now, like the politics. It's the first guy born after the war, you know. So it's a new generation. It's like it's less deep than it used to be, like politics, where like now it's like a new generation. It's more like someone like us would become president, you know what I mean?
Does it mean anything for the arts and for music? Or do you think it will make a difference in any way?
Maybe with Carla. Carla is a singer, she's a musician. So maybe she's gonna make Nicolas Sarkozy understand more about the conditions of musicians in France.
I don't know. They can do an album together, like Jane Birkin and Serge Gainsbourg. Like Carla and Nicolas singing like sex songs. It would be fun.
That was Tim Jones with Air, and Love 2 is out now. I don't know about you, Rosie, but I found there was something decidedly creepy there about the end when somebody's kind of talking about sex songs with Sarkozy with that kind of lounge music going on in the background. Felt like a nightclub at 3 o'clock, the wrong nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay, regular listeners to the show will know that Michael Hann is always banging on about his love of French heavy metal music. Honestly, he is. Now, at last, he has the chance to share his love with you, the listener, as he features arch French headbangers Trust in this week's feature with no name.
It's not an easy sell. A heavy metal band? A heavy metal band from France? A heavy metal band from France whose guitarist went on to become musical director for Johnny Hallyday, the butt of every joke about French rock ever made? A heavy metal band from France who had their lyrics translated into English by, of all people, Jimmy Percy of Sham 69? Bear with me. I'm not going to claim Trust are the best rock band the world has ever seen, but for one album, Repression, from 1980, they deserve attention. Trust is really all about two men, the guitarist Norbert Krief and the singer Bernie Bonvoisin. Krief was poodle-haired, wore sunglasses after dark, and was fond of what are known as axe heroics. Bonvoisin had hair far too short for a metal singer, adored AC/DC, and wrote lyrics that have traditionally had no place in metal. No Trust song mentions swords and sorcery, or implores women to debase themselves for the entertainment of men. Bonvoisin wrote from an aggrieved left-wing perspective about oppression in the Soviet bloc, about the hypocrisy of French bourgeois society, and about the failings of liberal democracy. So Trust weren't ever really a metal band. They were a punk band who happened to play metal. The key figure on Repression, though, is a man who had been shot dead by French police in November 1979. The gangster Jacques Mesrine had become something of a Robin Hood figure to sections of the French left, and his killing provoked accusations that the police had murdered him without giving him the chance to surrender. Two tracks on Repression explicitly reference Mesrine. Instinct d'amour takes its title from Mesrine's autobiography. Le Mitard goes a step further and takes its lyrics from that same book. Le Mitard is one of the most thrilling moments in early 80s heavy rock, a perfect combination of Bonvoisin's ire and outrage and Krief's guitar playing. There's nothing terribly flashy about it, it's a jagged, simple riff, over which Bonvoisin inhabits the role of Mesrine, remembering his time in the Fleury-Mérogis prison. You don't need to understand French to feel the passion and commitment in this performance, and YouTube clips of Trust performing it in recent years suggest that passion remains undimmed. Repression was Trust's second album and created enough waves for their label, CBS, to decide to release it outside France, which is probably where Trust went wrong. English-speaking audiences could not be expected to listen to French lyrics, and so Jimmy Percy was brought in to adapt the songs. And even comparing the English and French lyric sheets side by side shows how much was excised from the songs. My O-level French doesn't allow me to appreciate the full lyrics of the original, but even a three-year-old will be able to see that Percy's sloganeering had lessened, not increased, Trust's impact. The follow-up album, Marche ou Crève, released in the UK as Savage, was the last Trust album to get the translation and overseas release treatment. It was not a good album, and Trust retreated to being a francophone concern. But some little bit of their legend lived on. In 1988, Anthrax covered Trust's best-known song, Antisocial, though in its Jimmy Percy version, Antisocial. That was a shame, but really, can you imagine Joey Belladonna getting his mouth around this? Écraser des gens est devenu ton passe-temps. En les éclaboussant, tu deviens gênant. Dans ton désespoir, il reste un peu d'espoir. Celui de voir les gens s'enfarer, moi, bâtard. Mais cesse de faire le point, serre plutôt les poings. Pour
bouche, je tarderai, ta conduite est trop parfaite. Relève la gueule, je suis là, t'es pas seul. Ce qui hier t'enviait, aujourd'hui te jugerait.
That was Michael Hann on Trust, and the feature with no name returns next week. Right, Rosie, another week passes by.
Yes.
It's been great to see you, though. I hope you're going to be around for a while, because I was away, then you were away.
I know. We're going to be ships in the night.
Such a nice image. Don't forget that if you want to get in touch with us about the show, you can do so on our blog, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Find us on Facebook, where the membership is growing rapidly. It's going up at a rate of knots at the minute, so sign up there. Other than that, we have nothing to pass on. We will see you next Friday. Bye-bye.